Hi, I'm Marjorie Doyle. Welcome to That Time of the Night, coming to you on CBC Radio from here in St. John's. As usual this evening, I've got about 2.5 hours of music picked out, carefully chosen, a lot of variety, all of it good. But first, as usual, it's Between the Covers and short stories by Shauna Singh Baldwin. These are from her collection English Lessons. Tonight's story is seen through the eyes of a young woman who's adapting to life in the United States, but her mother and her aunt still cling to the old ways. Here's Shauna Singh Baldwin.
The Insult. I was watching from the living room window as the silver-gray Oldsmobile swooped into the driveway, and when it spread its wings, out came Uncle Harjeet's turquoise turban, Auntie Nimmy in a new lime-green sari, and their three little boys who can only speak English. I slipped on my spiky red sandals and smudged my kajal just a little to make my eyes look larger and waited in the hallway. "Aujiao," said my mother as they spilled in. Sat Sri Akal, everyone," shouted my father as he embraced Uncle Harjeet, and then, rather stiffly for the children, "How do you do, hey?" Auntie Nimi smells of the dentist's office even on Sunday, I thought, as we embraced. "My, she's becoming such a grown-up lady," said Uncle Harjeet, and he slapped me on the back as he used to when I wore a ponytail. When everyone was seated with a bowl of cashews or almonds within easy reach, my father began, as usual, to describe all the houses for which he currently had listings to Uncle Harjeet. My mother and her sister spoke low so as not to disturb them, and the three boys wandered around the room, examining my father's ceremonial dagger collection and staring round-eyed at the tiger skin on the wall. "Such a lovely sari," said my mother, although I know she can't abide lime green. This is so old. I have to go to India soon. I have no clothes left to wear." My mother seemed about to mention that there are more than 10 sari shops on Devon Avenue, but she thought better of it. "Are you planning to go soon?" she asked. "Next month. Will you take the children?" "Nahi ji, they don't like India. They say it's too dirty and has too many people." My mother managed to smile, but I could see she was upset. "I have never had that problem with my Nilu," she said, speaking of me as if I were absent or deaf. "A very good girl. Now she's getting to be of marriageable age. We will have to look for a good boy." She wasn't being quite truthful. I was past marriageable age, being close to 23. I felt her waiting. Auntie Nimi took a few more cashews. "Girls find their own partners nowadays," she said. "Nilu is an American girl. You won't even have to give her a dowry if she finds a fellow here." My mother sighed. She had asked a favor. She had been refused. She said, "We have never allowed her to go out with boys. All this dating, shating, kissing is okay in the movies. But we always wanted a nice boy from a good Sikh family from back home, you know." Auntie Nimi laughed. "There are many nice Sikh boys in Chicago." Again, she had missed her cue. "So many have cut their hair and don't wear a turban," fretted my mother. "So they make more money, no?" My mother gave up then. "Shall I make us some tea?" Auntie Nimi dusted the salt from her fingers and said, "That would be wonderful." When they left later that evening, my mother said, "She wanted me to ask her straight out, like a beggar. Huh!" And from then on, she did not speak to Auntie Nimi. There were a few compromises. My parents found a good sick fellow for me to marry in Delhi a few months later, but he had no turban. He'd been driving a jeep home from college on that day in 1984 when every Hindu was licensed to kill a Sikh. And it was lucky for him that they did no more than pull him from that wobbly raft and with his 6 yards of saffron billowing on the black potholed road, pull down his knot of sleek, long, curly black hair and take a scissor to it. My father says he must have fought like a tiger as the mob plucked out his beard. I have never asked my husband to tell me why he has no need to shave. It is easier to live in Chicago without a turban, though, and we were comfortable in an old wood-floored apartment near the L, not too far from the family. But still, my mother would not hear of our visiting Uncle Harjeet and Auntie Nimmi, even when I said I had a toothache. Plenty of other Indian dentists, she said, hunched over the yellow pages. But very few Sikh dentists. Sing, 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 could be a Rajput, too. I'll just have to ask the secretary. I took the phone from her. I'm married now. I'll do it, I said. But I didn't look for dentists. The doctor I chose was a gynecologist, and when I went to see her, she said I would have a child. It was a girl, and there were telegrams and letters of sympathy from relatives. Don't worry, by the Guru's grace, it will be a boy next time. My husband threw the letters from him with surprising force, and he was gentle with the little one, singing her to sleep with a lori, and once in a while, a Simon and Garfunkel song. A few weeks later, without so much as a call to see if we were home, Uncle Harjeet and Auntie Nimmi's Oldsmobile found a parking spot on our street, and Auntie Nimmi stood at our door in a magenta sari, saying, "Hello, Nilu. My, you're looking pale." Well, girls are always more difficult. I smiled. How would you know? She didn't hesitate. Everyone says. I opened my jar of fine Darjeeling while Uncle Harjeet picked up a rattle and pretended the baby was a dancer monkey. Taka, 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 oh, nach, meri jaan, nach. The little one started to cry, but my ears were listening for the doorbell or the phone to ring, and it would be my mother finding me serving Darjeeling to Auntie Nimmi and, worse, talking with her. The tea leaves boiled too long before I remembered to add milk. But Auntie Nimmi took its strength without comment, so I knew she had a purpose in coming to see me. It came after a few sips. Nilu, I'm very glad you have a child now, because I know you are now able to understand this. Your mother will not talk to me. I don't know what I have done, but did you know I did not get an invitation to your wedding?
I knew, but I looked as if I didn't.
Well, I want you to carry a message to her. Then a dramatic pause. Will you? Certainly. Tell her we are thinking about selling our house, and if she will not mind, we would like your father to be the broker. I'm sure you could just call Daddy and he would be delighted to list your house, Auntie. No, no. If I do that, it will seem as if I have ignored her. Please, take her this message. She blinked earnestly, and I heard myself say, "All right." A few minutes later, they were gone, and the baby went back to sleep. We were hemming chunnis on the balcony, the tall trees of Wilson Avenue dropping the last laser beams of October through the transparent folds of blue and lemon. And I spoke almost as if to the baby in her chair between us. Auntie Nimmi came to visit us a few days ago.
What? She thinks she is welcome?
She came to congratulate me about the baby.
Did she bring a gift?
No, I admitted.
What congratulations, then? Did you not tell her she did not do her duty to find you a husband on that trip to India? And that it is her fault you are married to a man without a turban?
No, I didn't, Mummy. It would have been impolite. She gave me a message for you. Not a movement. I tried again. She wants a favor.
What is it?
They are planning to sell their house, and so she told me to ask you if Daddy would like to be the sales agent.
Ask me?
She rolled the chiffon edge tight and looped it over her index finger, and I watched the silver needle dance faster and faster in and out.
Tell her there are plenty of other Indian real estate brokers in Chicago.
I said, "Are you sure? You won't ask Daddy?"
"Huh. For what? They don't need a larger house. The one they have is twice the size of the one they had in Karolbagh."
She bit off the thread and covered her head with the chunni. Request and refusal. Anna was satisfied. I knew then that the 2-year wound was healed. I hesitated a little as the envelope slipped through my fingers and the blue box let out a cold wind whistle. Though it was only November, I walked home with my teeth clenched tight so they wouldn't chatter. Would Auntie Nimmi come? She did. Uncle Harjeet brought the baby a stuffed tiger, slapped me on the back and said, "Don't pin this one on the wall." For once, she hung back, trying to seem unnoticeable in a flame orange sari. My mother's shawl brushed past my elbow as she came out of my kitchen. "Auji au," she said. Auntie Nimmi grew in stature, and she rushed at my mother, and the two sisters held each other fiercely. That was all. Then my mother led Auntie Nimmi into the spare bedroom we had converted into a prayer room. And when everyone was seated cross-legged on the sheet-covered carpeting before the holy book, and it came time to name the baby, my mother said to the Granthi, "Wait, I want Nimmi to do it." Then Auntie Nimmi rose and sat behind the big old tome with its large friendly writing, and she opened it at random and read the Guru's words at the top left-hand corner, so we all knew the baby's name would start like hers and mine with an N.
Shauna Singh Baldwin reading her story, The Insult, that comes from her collection, English Lessons. Tomorrow night on Between the Covers, she'll read the title story from that collection. I'm Marjorie Doyle. You're listening to That Time of the Night, coming to you on CBC Radio from St. John's.